comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth, thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. It's talk radio like nowhere else on Earth, that's a fact. I'm here because it matters. I am persuaded you're here because it matters. And let me tell you, you matter. You matter to this show. And you matter to a lot of other folks as well. You know, each week we publish something called the K-Files e-zine, or actually it's the K-Files, which is an e-zine, okay? And it's absolutely free, and it contains lots of good information, inside information about the show, but also information about things happening around the world. You may remember some time back, we reported here about several shows, as a matter of fact. We reported about Dr. Lakhazar Filipov in Bulgaria. You may remember that there were some very strange things that happened after he went public. He's the number two guy in their version of NASA. And he went public with information that extraterrestrials are, number one, real. Number two, they are here. Number three, we are in constant communications with them. That's what he said. And he was subjected to some rather rough treatment. I don't mean physically. I don't think that happened. But really rough treatment from inside Bulgaria. Well, last week in the K-Files e-zine, I put a story and a link to a video that last week over Bulgaria's capital, which is, of course, Sofia, hundreds of people witnessed a diamond-shaped UFO of tremendous size that hovered above the capital for quite some time before moving on. And I put a comment in the K-Files e-zine. The comment said, Dr. Filipov was right. You see? Now, if you are not subscribed to the K-Files e-zine, you missed all of that. You may have heard the shows we did, but you missed all of that. Because of the fact that some people, many people, in fact, around the world, listen to or watch this show on the internet, they sort of get it in their heads that, oh, it's just one of those little internet shows. Well, I can tell you there's nothing little about this show. It is truly worldwide. Now, the reason I say that is because there's so much more to know, and so much more to be involved in, and so much more that you can access if you take seriously what you hear on this show, like the K-Files e-zine. Now, some of you have been hearing me talk about K-Files every night now for 4 or 5 years, although I've been doing that for 10 years. But you've been with us for 4 or 5 years, you've been hearing that, and you've never yet subscribed. And you wonder, well, why should I? Because you're missing maybe 60% of the information you could be getting. That's why. Click the link on my website. Subscribe tonight. It's free. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to The Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is no stranger to the Kevin Smith Show audience. He's been with us quite a number of times before, and I certainly hope that he will be with us quite a number of times yet in the future. But we're delighted to welcome back to the show this evening the state director for MUFON, Pennsylvania. His name is John Ventry, and John, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back, Kevin.
John, last time you were here, we talked about your book. And I just want to tell folks that if they click your picture on my website, it will take them to your website where there's information about the book and they can purchase it. It's called, I believe, 2012, A Prophecy, right?
Yeah, 12/21/2012, A Prophecy.
And fascinating book. We got into that last time you were here. Tonight, I want to get into something that is a little bit more into the bailiwick of the MUFON director for the state of Pennsylvania. And that has to do entirely with UFOs. John, here we are in the 21st century. We're sitting in the year 2010, and there are people, after all these decades of information, decades of evidence for the existence of UFOs, the reality that they do exist, and we still have people all over the place that can't make up their mind whether the Earth is flat or not. They still can't determine, well, you know, I don't know if I think UFOs are real or not. And usually what they say, John, is, well, I don't believe in that kind of stuff. And before we dive into this, I want to make my very oft-made statement. There's nothing to believe, folks. Nothing to believe. Either they exist or they don't. But, John, I'd like for you to help us out here tonight a little bit and make the case for UFOs, if such a case can be made.
Absolutely. It will be made.
Yeah. All right. Let's get started. Where's the evidence? I'm going to play the devil's advocate. Where's the evidence?
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, yeah, okay. You know, I give a presentation called The Case for UFOs, and I go through a whole bunch of stuff, and I want to cover some of that. But let me start first with just simple artwork, okay?
All right.
Now, what I've been told is that when paintings were made back in the Renaissance time, et cetera, they weren't abstract. People painted what they saw. And when you look at this, and it goes to every culture, whether it's in the Orient, in Japan, in China, whether it's in Europe, there are paintings and rock carvings and drawings that all depict UFOs. And one of the better ones is the painting of the Madonna and Saint Giovanni, that hangs in Florence. And, you know, unfortunately, I went to Florence last year, and I forgot to go into this Piazza Vecchio in Florence to take a look at this picture. It's a 17th century painting, and when you look at it, there's the Madonna, and then there's two small children in it, and over her right shoulder is a large UFO with a bunch of smaller craft coming out of it. Over her left shoulder is a man and a dog looking up, and he's pointing at a UFO hovering in the sky. And that is typical of many, many paintings that were done, especially in the Renaissance period, during the Crusades. That would be the first piece of evidence, is why are these people painting that? You know, is it just their imagination? And like I said, I'm told that painters back then painted what they saw.
Well, there's an additional question to ask. Not only why were they painting it, but how could they paint something like that they haven't seen, that now, if they have not seen it, how could they paint it? And now we're seeing objects that look like and are shaped just like what's in those paintings. And they're showing up on video. They're showing up on film. So here we are, centuries later, those same type of objects showing up. How could they have painted something like that if they had never seen it?
Absolutely. And, you know, you even get the paintings that show what clearly look like, you know, people, creatures in some sort of spacesuit wearing helmets. So, you know, UFOs didn't start in 1947 with Roswell, although for the general public that probably is the date that started the UFO period. But this goes back 50,000 years, and we'll get into that. I'm just starting off with the paintings that are out there and some of the sculptures, etc.
50,000 years. That's a long time.
Absolutely.
All right. So the case begins. Actually, you started us at hundreds of years ago, but let's go back 50,000 years. How do we know that UFOs were showing up here on Earth 50,000 years ago? How do we know that?
Well, you know, two of the best documents that, you know, I'll refer to now are, you know, really government documents. One is the Fire Officer's Guide to Disaster Control. It was written by two gentlemen. One turned out to be the Assistant Fire Chief in Los Angeles, and he wrote this book. It's FEMA approved. And let me just pull this out here. The one issue was in 1992, was the first time. It was, no, 1978, then 1992, and I think 2008 was the third issue of this book. So I'll refer to that, and I'll refer to the Air Force in describing how we know it goes back that far.
All right.
Okay, so if you go to this book and you go to chapter 13, I'm doing that right now. Okay, now you've got this FEMA-approved book, and chapter 13 on page 458, there's a section there that says the UFO threat, a fact. Now, why would that be in the fire officer's guide in every fire department in the country? There isn't a section on the Bigfoot threat, the elf threat, you know, the fairy threat, the ghost threat, the poltergeist threat, but yet there's a section on titled the UFO threat, a fact.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when we start going through this, this is, and for the listeners, if you are just casual UFO listeners, and like how you opened up the program, the people that I've come into who don't understand that this is real, it's because they've never looked into it. They haven't researched it. And it's just, well, I don't believe in that, you know, just like you had said.
Mm-hmm.
But if you start to look into it, there is so much information out there. And I would suggest reading this. You could probably get it in the library. Just go to the library and read it. Go to chapter 13. Some of the best UFO information you'll see is in this chapter, and I'll start going through this chapter for you.
And let me throw something in here before you get into that. Let me throw something in on top of what you've just said. We do run into a lot of people who say, "Oh, I just don't believe in that." And if you happen, folks, to if I'm talking to somebody right now that in your mind you're saying, "Oh, I just don't believe in that." If that's the case, listen carefully to what I'm going to say. Nobody cares what you believe because it doesn't matter. Now, that sounds rude, but now hear the rest of the story. It doesn't matter because whether you believe or not, a fact is a fact. Whether you believe it or don't believe it, if it's true, it's true. It's just like if you said, "I don't believe in gravity." Okay, you don't have to believe in it. But step off a 10-story building and see if it's real. Whether you believe it or not, if it's real, it's real. Okay, now, John, go ahead and share with us from that chapter.
Okay, and there's a lot of information in this chapter. It's really good. I mean, this will give you an education on ufology. It starts off saying the very real threat posed by unidentified objects with paying their attention to the very real threat. It has created blackouts, communication disruptions, and other potentially disastrous conditions have been linked to UFO sightings. This chapter is largely based on the research of Charles Bommie, and that's the guy, one of the writers of the book who became the assistant fire chief in L.A. And there's a couple of things with him that's extremely interesting. It says here that his interest was greatly heightened in 1969 when Congress adopted a law called the Extraterrestrial Exposure Law, and it gives the title and everything here, Part 1211, etc., where you can be quarantined under armed guard if you've been extraterrestrially exposed. So why do we get a law like that on something that isn't real?
Mm-hmm. That's an excellent question. Why would they pass a law to protect you from something that their official story says doesn't exist?
So I got a copy of the Extraterrestrial Exposure Law, and that's what it's called. You know, it's not called the, meteor impact law or, the space debris falling to Earth law. This is called the Extraterrestrial Exposure Law. I have a copy of it in front of me. On July 16th, 1969, the United States law called Extraterrestrial Exposure Law made it illegal for the public to come in contact with extraterrestrials or their vehicles. Those are the words, and this is your Congress who passed this law. That's what it says. Extraterrestrials or their vehicles. It's Title 14, Section 1211 of the Code of Federal Regulations. Anyone found guilty of such contact could face up to 1 year imprisonment as well as a fine of $5,000. They could be quarantined on the armed guard by NASA without a hearing. So, yeah, this piqued the author of the Firefighter's Guide, and I think everybody else that's listening right now. That was a federal law in 1969.
Now, they eventually repealed that law because they realized, I think, that if anyone was ever arrested based on that law, that would be federal confirmation of extraterrestrial reality.
Absolutely, and that took place in 1991. So for 22 years, we had this law on the books. No one was ever prosecuted because, like you say, and like I believe, if you prosecute somebody, you're admitting that it's real.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to, because to prosecute them, you're accusing them of having personal contact with extraterrestrials. So you are, by making the charge, you're admitting extraterrestrials exist. If they don't exist, then they could not be guilty of violating this law.
Absolutely. So then as I'm reading through this chapter, and I'm just going to go in order here, he says here, as far back as 1959, the Inspector General of the Air Force issued the following training order. Unidentified flying objects, sometimes treated lightly by the press and referred to as flying saucers, must be rapidly and accurately identified as serious Air Force business.
And that was in when, 1959?
Yeah, this was just a memo that he's referring to here, dated as December 24th, 1959. I'm just going in order of what's in the book. There's so much information here.
Okay, and this is the FEMA-approved firefighter's manual.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And you know what's one of the other things I find real interesting, Kevin, is when you look at the information that was out there back in the 40s and 50s, and I believe that was the era that we were actually getting the truth, and it all changed in the 60s, but at least the initial reports, those newspaper articles, the front page Roswell article, the front page Washington Post article, the front page Battle of L.A. article in 1942, they were all given to the newspapers by the Air Force. I mean, this wasn't somebody, out in their yard or in their farm who saw something and reported it. The story was given to the press by the Air Force because back then, we told the truth. That was that World War II generation who, saved the world, and, you know, told the truth, and they were our allies. The government was our ally back then. And this is an interesting analysis I make, that I believe the real truth was being told back then, even though it started to get covered up.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, and in fact, that happened. The cover-up appears, at least from my point of view, the cover-up machinery appears to have started with General Ramey in 1947 and the Roswell incident. But even after that, the Air Force was still putting information out for some time. I think in 1950, I think it was 1957. I could be wrong about that, but there was an incident in Tucson where a UFO flew over Davis-Monthan Air Base, and they dispatched a plane to chase it, and he couldn't catch up with it and couldn't keep up with it. But the next day in the newspaper, and it was in February of that year, the next day in the newspaper, front page of the newspaper, you had a picture of the pilot. You had the story about what happened. You had an interview with the air controller that dispatched him from Davis-Monthan Air Base. You would never get that kind of information and cooperation out of the Air Force today.
Absolutely. So, you know, as I go through this, and here's something that's really interesting. And you know what? I was talking to the Discovery Channel 2 years ago, when we filmed that show here in Pennsylvania called UFOs Over Earth. It was a pilot for a series, and we did the Bucks County incident that we've talked about on your show. And the producer was talking about, do you have any interesting UFO stories, any cases that really haven't been done? And I threw out, how about the Battle of L.A.? And he just thought that just the title of that was so cool that it would make a cool show, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not one that's well-known, but here in this manual I'm looking at, it says that the author's interest was piqued in the early morning hours of August 26, 1942. He was roller skating from his house to the nearest fire station, and he could see aerial fireworks.
All right, we have to step away for a break, John. We'll pick up there when we come back, and we'll continue hearing the case for UFOs from John Ventry. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is John Ventry. John, when we went away, you were just about to tell us about the guy going to the firehouse.
Yeah, so, you know, picking up with the author now, he's in August 26th of 1942. He's roller skating, goes over, sees an aerial fireworks display, and it says here, few residents of the U.S. have ever experienced a real or imaginary UFO invasion of UFOs, and this incident became known as the Los Angeles Air Raid of 1942. They saw 15 or 20 moving things which seemed to change course at great speed and was unaffected by bursting shells. Invaders were later called weather balloons. And I, you know, and I can tell you also in reading the newspaper article, this was probably the first time we used a weather balloon cover for that. But this is, you know, you figure a little bit after Pearl Harbor, you know, what, 10 months later, 9 months later from Pearl Harbor. So we're on readiness, you know, in case of an invasion by the Japanese. And we see these UFOs over Los Angeles, and we fired 1,431 anti-aircraft shells at this UFO. There are pictures of it. You can Google it and look it up. And we hit it. They seemed to just bounce off of it, almost like there was a force field around the UFOs. And this is what the residents saw. And the real interesting thing, in the newspaper article, I don't know who they quoted, maybe it was even the newspaper man said when he interviewed the general and said that they fired and hit it and couldn't bring it down, and that it turned out to be a weather balloon. The question was posed, well, if you can't take down a weather balloon with anti-aircraft shells, how are you going to protect us from a Japanese invasion?
Good question. Excellent question.
Absolutely. And you can just see the ridiculousness of the explanations that are given in these cases. But, you know, the point is here, the guy who writes this hazmat book for the fire department, like I said, is FEMA approved. He saw this in 1942.
All right. Now, let me ask you a question. Is this guy still alive?
Yes, he is.
Now, that's interesting.
He was alive a year and a half ago. Because he put out the third version of this, and I happened to see him on the TV news, and he's still around. And what I was trying to do with the Discovery Channel is to get them to do a show on the Battle of L.A., interview this guy from what he saw as a kid, and go into the story of the Battle of L.A., but they never ended up doing the show. But, you know, these type of witnesses, like Roswell witnesses, you know, they're not going to be around much longer. You know, we're within 10 years of losing almost all the witnesses that we had from the 1940s.
Well, that's the plan. That's the plan. That's what lamestream media intends to do. They intend to let it all die out. Now, I saw a documentary on television where the subject of the Battle of L.A. came up, and one of the standard skeptics that you see all the time, he said, well, you know, who knows what that was? There aren't any eyewitnesses still around. And that's nonsense. Here, you've just told us about one. And I found one that's a college professor, and he's been on the show and talked about what he saw. So, yes, there are witnesses. I mean, think of this. L.A. at that time had a population of what, 1 million people? At least. All 1 million of those people who were alive at that time have died? Come on, give me a break.
I guarantee you that even if we talk to this guy from this manual, he could probably name the other kids that were with him that saw this because they were watching it. And I wish, you know, if there's any listeners out there for the Sci-Fi Channel, the History Channel, you know, I pitched this to Bill Burns because I did a show with him on UFO Hunters. We got to do a show on the Battle of L.A. We just have to while the witnesses are still alive.
Well, there are people from all of those channels that tune in every night, and so who knows? Maybe this will be fruitful for you.
Yeah, well, it really should be. Well, then, you know, the manual goes into UFO, and I'm just reading the titles off to you. UFO background information. It talks about very credible witnesses. It talks about military pilots, astronauts, police officers, firefighters, members of Congress, U.S. presidents. Says it goes back to ancient times. It's overwhelming evidence. Then the next title is UFOs. What are they? Are they of extraterrestrial origin, natural causes from other dimensions, time travelers? It goes into Hynek and the classification system, shapes of UFOs, and then it goes into the history of UFOs. And it talks about the World War II Foo Fighters that were seen. And that there were over 1,200 reports to the Air Force regarding Foo Fighters during World War II. And, you know, we find that even in the German documents, that they thought this was an American invention or weapon or spy-type probe. And we thought it was the same as theirs. So, I mean, you would have to think that that alone is confirmation that there were these probes up there observing what we were doing.
Well, you know, the same thing in the Cold War with a lot of the UFO sightings. There was suspicion here that that was some sort of Soviet thing. And in the now declassified Soviet files, of course, they haven't declassified all their UFO files, but some of them, we discovered they thought it was some sort of an American thing. And so, you know, everybody on Earth was thinking it was someone else.
Yep, absolutely. All right, and then now this manual goes into the fact that the Air Force has concluded that our national security was not threatened. So we put together, the Condon report to take a look at this. And it says here, the Condon report seemed to be more concerned with the establishment of emotional stability or instability of those who reported the sightings than the actual evidence. It goes on to quote J. Allen Hynek had said, the fact that they were here on this planet is beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's from the guy who originally was the original debunker of Project Blue Book and then changed his mind after finding out not all of the best cases were given to him. They were held back, and that he couldn't explain a lot of these cases, and he went and opened up CUFOS, Center for UFO Research Studies.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned Project Blue Book, and this is a Project Blue Book is waved in under the noses of the public by a lot of skeptics, where they say, well, look, 95% of these were natural causes, and some of them there just wasn't enough information to do an investigation. What they don't say is that, number one, the best cases never made it to Blue Book. Number two, the best cases in Blue Book were the ones that were reported by people who had a technical background and could provide very detailed descriptions and in scientific type lingo. And those could not be explained away. Now, the very best cases represented about, around 1,200 cases that could not be explained. Okay, now, whenever Project Blue Book says, we cannot explain this one, we have no explanation for it, what they are saying is, this is truly an unidentified, and it's, we don't know what it is. We can't explain it or explain it away. And it's in the air. It's an object. It is a UFO. So there with Project Blue Book, you have a government document, a series of reports from a government project that officially says UFOs exist.
Absolutely. And you know what the interesting thing is, and the misconception, is people say, well, the Air Force says they don't exist. You will never find that anywhere saying that it doesn't exist. They never said that. The only statements that the Air Force have made is that they are not a threat to national security. So they're almost admitting, because they're saying they are. Well, that they have to exist if they are, and they're just saying that it's not a threat to national security.
That's correct. Now, if they don't exist, the answer would not be they are not a threat to national security. The answer would be UFOs, that's nonsense. They don't even exist. That would be the answer.
Right.
Now, there's something similar to that on a page on NASA's website. It takes some doing to find it, but if you search, you will find on NASA's website a series of articles and statements about UFOs. And one of the articles, there is this statement that says, from time to time, astronauts on missions in space have reported seeing anomalous objects in space. These have all been investigated by NASA and have been, and here's the quote, deemed to not be abnormal in the space environment. That's the answer. Okay.
So UFOs aren't abnormal. I agree.
Yeah, that's all they're saying. If they're not abnormal, then they're normal. Their statement, where they have the opportunity to answer that, does not deny the existence of UFOs, but simply says it's not abnormal. And that's on NASA's website.
And it's funny you mentioned NASA. So as I'm reading through this, now the author starts speaking of NASA It says here they control these UFO sighting reports, talks about Apollo, Skylab, and then goes into astronauts saw and photographed UFOs. As early as Apollo 2 mission, which culminated in the moonwalk with Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and Michael Collins reported a sighting of a UFO in the first half of their flight to the lunar surface. Then it goes into many other reports, 1966 Gemini 12, astronauts Lovell, Aldrin, said they saw four UFOs linked together. And another report in October of 64 by Russian cosmonauts, it says astronauts here, but they were cosmonauts, on the Volgograd, reported they were surrounded by a formation of fast-moving disc-shaped objects. And he puts all the references in here, too, for on this information.
Well, you know, one of the things, John, that we hear about a lot, people often ask this question on the show, will we ever get disclosure? And the answer that I give is it's happening all the time. It's been happening, and it's happening more and more often. But if you mean a meeting where the press comes in, the president gets up and says, okay, folks, here's what we know, I doubt that's ever going to happen. But you get disclosure all the time. Now, you're holding in your hand a current government-approved textbook for firefighters, and it's got that amazing information and disclosure in it. We have to step away for a break. We'll be back right after this. I've received a flash message from Australia early wanting to know what happened to my Kevin Smith Show mug, because I drink coffee out of the Kevin Smith Show mug every night. It's in the dishwasher. So I'm using a regular coffee cup. My guest this evening is John Ventry. He is the state director for MUFON, Pennsylvania. And we're talking about the case for UFOs. John, you know, you're holding in your hands this FEMA-approved, and I have to tell you, FEMA is not one of my favorite agencies, yet they are a government agency, but a FEMA-approved firefighter's manual that just lays the case out very factually, and in fact, one of the titles in the book is The UFO Threat, a Fact. So what I was saying is that disclosure is happening and has been happening and will continue to happen by means just like that. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Yeah, you know, I agree, but those are kind of subtle disclosures. Here's my opinion, because people have asked me this, you know, especially with Obama, is there going to be a disclosure? But here's exactly how I think it's going to take place. I think what's going to happen is you're going to get SETI is going to come out, and I believe SETI is part of NASA and part of the cover-up. I firmly believe that. But they're going to come out, and they're going to say, we have found a signal, okay? And they're going to say it's repeated, it's verifiable, we've identified it. Now, I don't know where it'll be, the, you know, Zeta Reticuli, wherever, in Andromeda strain, but that's the statement, that we found it, it's repeated, it's intelligent, we found life in space, but it's 30, you know, light years away, and they've never been here. See, that covers the whole UFO phenomenon, whereas MUFON says, you know, why are we sending radio signals out? Why are we looking for radio signals when we know they're already here? They're never going to admit that. They're going to say we picked up signals, intelligent broadcasts. We know they're out there, but they're so far away, we doubt they've ever been here. And I think that's really a smart way for them to say that this whole UFO thing hasn't happened. We haven't back-engineered it. Roswell, everything else didn't happen. Because I think SETI works in conjunction with NASA. You know, why even send out radio waves? They break up into white noise. You know.
Well, here's another thing. Let's say that there is a spaceship coming from 30 light years away. Now, traveling at the speed of light, it takes 30 years to get here. Okay? Now, that being the case, radio waves travel at the speed of light. If you're traveling at or beyond the speed of light, radio will not work because you're traveling as fast as the signal you're trying to send, or you're traveling faster than the signal you're trying to send. So they're not using radio. And the whole thing about, you know, if SETI wants to do what they're doing, that's fine. I'm all for it. But as far as I can see, it's a waste of time and money because radio is not the technology they're using to communicate with each other. It cannot be.
Just think of how ridiculous that is, Kevin, that these people are, or creatures are 1,000 years ahead of us or 100 years ahead of us, and they got radio.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah. That's why they're coming to Earth. They're coming to Earth to visit Radio Shack to buy spare parts.
Or get an iPod or something. You know, I got another one here, and this is not in the firefighter's guide, but we were talking about the president. This one is from Don Phillips, who was a Lockheed Skunk Works engineer. And it's just something I print out and I have in my file. And it says that, during Apollo landing, Neil Armstrong says to the other astronaut, he says, "Look, they're here. They are right over there. Look at the size of those ships. And it is obvious they don't like us being here." And I don't know if that was Apollo 11, because I know Apollo 11, the same thing with Armstrong talking to, I think, Buzz Aldrin, saying, do you see that craft on the rim of the, like a crater over there? They're watching us.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the type of quotes that are out there.
Well, yeah, and see, that was back at a time when ham operators could pick up and intercept and listen to the conversations between the astronauts and mission control. And so a lot of those have gotten out there. Now, and in fact, ham operators have been able to do that for some time, right up to fairly recently. Relatively recently, NASA does not allow communications out live and open channel. And here's one of the reasons why. I'm going to play something. This is from Shuttle to Mission Control, all right? And I think you should be able to hear it.
Questa è una registrazione radio dello shuttle, decodificata o passata in chiaro per errore.
We are retransmitting the Space Shuttle Airground Communication from Mission 20. This is WA3
AIS. Houston, this is Discovery. We still have the alien spacecraft under observance.
All right, there you have it.
Unbelievable. We still have the alien spacecraft.
Under observance, yeah. And so now, you know, they don't allow just that free-to-air transmission. Because of that, and because of some other incidents, you had one where a female astronaut says, "We have a UFO." And they said, "What?" And she said, "We have a UFO. You know, we're observing a UFO." So, you know, now they don't allow the transmissions just to get out there into the public. And, you know, never mind the fact that we own the radios. Never mind the fact that we paid the astronauts and paid for the mission. They're not going to let you know. So what do you think about...
Another thing, Kevin, too, is even the photos, like, you know... they used to release all of the pictures they took of Mars. That's how you came up with the Mars face, etc. Now there's a 6-month delay. NASA has to go through every one of those photos with a magnifying glass to make sure there's nothing in it. Just think about our Constitution. You're talking about outer space here. You know, we're not filming a Soviet nuclear lab or something. why would you need 6 months before you could release photos from outer space? Why wouldn't that be released immediately? What could be out there that is of such importance that you can't let the public see it? There's something very wrong with that.
Well, let me bring up something that I've talked about here on the air, and then I'm going to couple it with something that's in your material, your presentation about the case for UFOs. The Air Force published a document in which they outlined things that they need to do, and that's very common. But in this, and this was 2001, I believe, in this document, they talked about something called the space-based space surveillance system. Space-based space surveillance system. Now, this is a series of very powerful optical satellites, and it says that it's for the purpose of being able to track and identify deep space forces for both offensive and defensive operations. Well, naturally then, and by the way, you can go on the internet and you can put in space-based space surveillance system and do that at Google and click on images, and you'll see there's an image of one of those satellites sitting in a building with a bunch of employees. I believe it's Boeing employees around it. They're working on it. That system was due to be operational by 2010, and there've been a series of launches putting it up there. But the question then is, if it's for the purpose of identifying deep space forces, that means there's more than us out there. Who's out there? All right, now I want to couple that with something you bring up in your presentation on the case for UFOs. And that is that Ronald Reagan, when he was president, mentioned a possible alien invasion in at least 5 different speeches. We have to take a break. We'll pick up there when we come back. Don't go away, folks. We'll be right back.
Arizona, this is the Kevin Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, John Ventry, the state director for MUFON in Pennsylvania. We're talking about the case for UFOs. For those of you just now joining us in the second hour, welcome aboard. Wish you had been here for the first hour, and believe me, you will wish you had been here for the first hour, too. Okay, John, I was just mentioning the coupling of these two things. We have a system in space called the Space-Based Space Surveillance System, and it's a series of very powerful optical satellites peering into deep space for the purpose of identifying deep space forces and tracking deep space forces for both offensive and defensive purposes. And then you couple that with Ronald Reagan mentioning at least 5 times in speeches something about alien invasion. Is it possible that the powers that be, and in this case I'm talking specifically about military powers that be, that advise the president, is it possible that they know something about a genuinely hostile force that's out there that could be a threat?
I'd say absolutely. And, it goes back way before Ronald Reagan. There was a quote from General MacArthur to the West Point cadets where he said, and this may have been, you know, 1948, somewhere around there, that, you know, the day is coming when we will be in an armed conflict with extraterrestrials, an extraterrestrial force from outer space. So, I mean, that goes back 40 years before Reagan made his five speeches talking about uniting the human race against an alien threat.
One of the things, of course, that we hear when that comes up, there are people that get all upset, bent out of shape, and feathers ruffled, because they say, well, you know, the extraterrestrials, if they really wanted to harm us, could have done so thousands of years ago, and they've been coming here all this time, and they've never destroyed the Earth yet. But see, that doesn't take into account that there was no one on Earth up until now that had any kind of weaponry that they could consider to be a threat.
Right.
And it's possible that our own technology cause us to appear to be a threat to them and could bring about a preemptive strike by them.
You know, I think, you know, that the government, the U.S. government, is truly on our side. You know, they're trying to protect us. You know, even though they're violating the Constitution and the First Amendment with a lot of this, I think the thing is we're buying time. And, you know, all the black projects, we're trying to get to the point where if a conflict does occur, we can win it, obviously. You know, you don't pick a fight if you think you're going to lose it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's my personal belief. I think the government's on our side. We're trying to buy time. We're trying to advance our weaponry. And, you know, the day will come where, you know, whatever it is they're doing, and, you know, it may be abductions. It may be genetic. We may be genetically engineered. It certainly would explain a lot from evolution, the missing links. So when you say that they may not have been a threat, well, you know, if they altered us from Neanderthal man to Cro-Magnon man, who, by the way, only existed for 10,000 years and could not be evolution. Nothing could evolve that quickly and disappear, and then all of a sudden Homo sapiens show up. Well, that's a threat. You're changing me.
Mm-hmm.
You're altering me.
Well, yeah, and of course, I guess threats are in the eyes of the beholder.
Right.
You know, I have been in situations, I won't go into details, I was in a situation where I had a guy working for me that formerly was a U.S. Army Ranger instructor. And there was a very, very volatile, hostile situation happening around us on a pretty big scale. And I was looking for where are the people, the command and control of this mob, where are they meeting? That's what we were looking for. And we walked into the very place where they were, and the Army Ranger was all uptight. And I was not. And it's not because I'm naive, it's because we were perceiving things from two different perspectives. He could see nothing but threat. I could see no threat unless he and I did and said certain things.
Yeah.
So it's the perspective. Threats in the eye of the beholder. And, well, not always. Sometimes it's on. You know, so I've been in situations like that, too, where no matter who you are or what your perspective is, it's on. But I think, you know, threats can be in the eye of the beholder. And I think the thing that's real ticklish here is, you know, we don't want to, I hope we don't do anything that flashes threat across the minds of any extraterrestrials out there so that they perceive us as a threat. And you know, I think that could be part of what's behind all the secrecy.
Well, you know, on that thought, Kevin, you know, why are we sending out, we were sending radio waves, said he just switched to microwaves. Just think about how dangerous that is to invite somebody here who's so much more advanced than us. Wouldn't you rather just wait? You know, let's assume that they haven't been here, which is, I don't believe that. I think they have been here, but why are you inviting them here? I mean, that could be the most dangerous thing that we're doing as a human race, is reaching out to them when we're primitive at this stage of development.
Well, yeah, especially if they turned out to be non-benevolent.
Correct.
Yeah, and you know, we have so many, look, all you have to do, and you, I know you've done this, and you deal with it all the time, John, as a MUFON director in Pennsylvania. Information all over the internet, where people are making assumptions about the extraterrestrials. Well, folks, that's like saying, making assumptions about the Earthlings. You can't do that. I can tell you, I've lived all over this planet, and yes, we do have things in common with everyone on the planet, but it's those small differences that really, really make the difference. In the middle of the tribal areas in Pakistan, mothers and daddies in those areas want exactly the same thing for their families that you want for yours. They want enough food, enough water, to live and live fairly well. They want a good education for their kids. They want a doctor when they need health care. They want the same things that you want. But there are small differences in the way they perceive life. And those small differences mean that I could walk into that area, but probably not walk out. And so you cannot say the extraterrestrials are this, the extraterrestrials are that. There are apparently several groups, aren't there, John?
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't think we'll get to it tonight, but the, you know, the Air Force's class that they taught at the Cadet Academy says that there are three, possibly four different types. And you know, so if you ask me what they look like, well, I just refer to the Air Force manual. There's three or four different types.
Okay. All right, so you got three or four different types, apparently from different worlds, and so you can't make a blanket statement that the extraterrestrials are one way or another. Each group is going to have its own agenda and its own perspective on what they see on Earth. They'll have their own views about that. And some may be hostile to us, some may not be. Do you think that our military views all of these as hostile?
Well, you know, we have that standing order out there that says shoot them down. I think that was General Kleining. So, you know, some of our behavior doesn't make sense. I mean, how do you know they don't have weapons that could... I mean, we know that they've been able to take out, you know, knock the power out, like the incident at Exeter that knocked out the power for 36 million people. We know that they shut down, you know, engines and electrical stuff. Why would we be shooting at them at the hope of taking one down so we can back engineer it? That would be the only reason.
Well, let me ask the question from a different angle. Are there any of these groups that our military views as friendlies and has ongoing communication and relations with?
Yeah, I would have to think so. I mean, you hear about, you know, a meeting with General Eisenhower where that UFO kind of, you know, shadowed the plane, and after he landed at the base, I believe in New Mexico, the UFO landed and there was a meeting. So, you know, if they're anything like us, and hopefully they're not, I mean, you know, I was watching the president's speech tonight, and anything he said, you know, the Democrats stood up, no Republicans stood up. So if they're anything like us, yeah, you got friendly ones, you got hostile ones, and that kind of explains, you know, what happens with abductions and cattle mutilations and everything else going on. But then maybe the positive ones explains what's going on with the advancements in, you know, computers and technology that that we have, whether that's reverse engineered or given to us.
Well, I'll tell you, I think one of the most amazing things that we've talked about here tonight, and of course I have been exposed to it, and a lot of the listeners have, but for lots and lots of folks tuning into this show, they're just now becoming aware of these things. And one of the most amazing things about what you've shared with us is the fact that there's this very upfront information available in government documents. I want to open the telephone lines and invite our audience to join us if you have a question or if you have a comment. The telephone number, for those of you watching on our TV channel, is on the screen. For those of you listening by radio, computer, cell phones, etc., the telephone number, the main number here in the studio, is 623-444-5889. The toll-free number is 888-223-4599. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can call the main number, 623-444-5889, or you can use my flash message feature on my website. Just go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down, and you will see on the website a link that says flash message. Now, I think it's only fair to say, and I need to explain, sometimes folks think I'm being rude, and I'm really not being rude. I'm trying to get as many slots open for you to call in as possible. So our telephone is on a timer, okay? And when you call in, I put you on hold. The timer doesn't start, but when I bring you on the air, it starts. And it gives you 3 minutes to ask your question or make your comment, and then it cuts off. So that's so that we can get as many calls in as possible, all right? So I'm not being rude. It's just like John, when you're talking and it comes time for a break and I have to step in and say, well, we got to take a break. We'll pick up there when we come back. Those are automatic. Those breaks happen automatically. So I'm not being rude, all right? I'm trying to make it possible for as many people to get in as possible. So what do you think, folks? John has been making the case for UFOs and using primarily government documents to do it. What do you think? Do you think maybe that disclosure is happening, but sort of subtly, through these documents that he's been talking about? Are you still in a quandary and you wonder if UFOs are real? Whatever the case may be, I'd like for you to give us a call. We'd like to hear from you where you stand on this. I think it's pretty upfront. I think it's pretty much in your face when we talk about these documents. They're published, they're out there, and they're official U.S. government documents. And they say it's real. So what do you think? 623-444-5889. Or 888-223-4599. We have a flash message from Australia, and this is Blue in Australia. He says, could this law that you're debating regarding the handbook quotation, could it be a part of the UFO false flag invasion idea being presented on the internet by some theories? Let me answer that one. No. And John, you can answer. I'll give you a shot at it too. No, I don't think so, because the law existed and then was repealed in, what, 1991?
Yeah. So this is 30 years old. You know, mm-hmm. They passed it and then repealed it 20 years ago.
Yeah. The quotations from this FEMA manual, they've been around for decades. When did the first FEMA manual, the firefighters manual, come out that had this stuff in it?
Yeah, it was 1978, 1992, and 2008.
Yeah. And the Air Force Academy used to teach a course It was a physics course in which they talked about the reality of UFOs. That course was written by Colonel Wendell Stevens, who's been on this show and is a big voice in the UFO community. So, that's not part of a false flag, as far as I'm concerned. What do you think, John? Part of a false flag operation?
No, I agree with you. Now, this, we're talking about stuff that you know, and we're talking about stuff that happened 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure at some point there's going to be a false flag situation, and I'm actually kind of surprised with the recession and everything we have that, you know, the president hasn't diverted our attention away from this with a false flag type situation that would get everybody talking about this instead of the economy and just divert our attention. But, you know, you got to be really skeptical of the first time that you're told that this is real or there's some sort of contact. You know, even if it's SETI just saying we picked up those, you know, signals, what is the reason behind it? Why are they telling us this now after 70 good years of evidence? You know, is it real? What are they? Or are they trying to just misdirect us at something?
Yeah.
You know, the whole false flag concept is a very interesting strategy.
All right, let's go to the telephone and caller, if you will, tell us your first name and from where you're calling.
Hey, Kevin, this is Ryan in Washington.
Hi.
How are you guys doing tonight?
Good, Ryan. How are you?
Pretty good. I had a question about that satellite, Kevin, that you were talking about for detecting deep space forces.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know if that is focused on one specific location, or does it rotate around in different areas?
No, it's a series. There are 10 of those satellites, so they're all looking at different.
If it was pointed towards, like, say, the reticuli or something like that, you might be able to determine which area of space they're looking at.
But, well, that of course would be classified, highly classified. So
yeah, I suppose it would be. So okay, moving on to another topic. You know, the thing that sealed the deal for me on whether this is real or not is that Jackie Gleason was golfing friends with President Nixon. And you know the whole story with that. I mean,
mm-hmm.
that to me is one of the things that sealed the deal for me. That you know, I don't see why his wife would make that up, because she was on TV with, and she said it right on there on TV on a special with. But it's well documented that she's. I don't see why she would make that up. I mean, that to me, that he went in and seen bodies in cold storage containers and came home and told his wife. And keep up the good work. I guess I don't really have too many questions. I'm starting to lean on the opinion that I have doubts that the presidents are briefed on this. I know that Clinton tried to get into it and he couldn't get into it, and all these presidents that tried to get into it. It's got to be in some kind of compartmentalization or something. But anyways, that's all I got for tonight.
All right, thanks for the call. John, let's talk about the presidents being briefed.
Yeah.
I think most Americans, and certainly most people around the world, think the president certainly would have the highest security clearance and have access to all the information. The fact is, the president has one of the lowest top secret clearances that there is. And, when Jimmy Carter wanted to know about it, the CIA director at the time was someone by the name of George Herbert Walker Bush, who told him, "I'm sorry, Mr. President, you don't have the clearance to have that information."
Yeah. Well, just think about it. You know, the presidents come and go every 4 or 8 years, and the people that are deeply entrenched in this are career people for 30 or 40 years, you know, however long they decide to work. They know that you're, you know, just take our current president. I mean, what kind of background does he have? What was he, 2 years as a senator, and he was a community organizer, and you're going to tell him the biggest secrets that we have? I'm not disrespecting the president at all, but is he the most qualified person? No. So, yeah, I agree with you. I don't think the presidents do get briefed. Now, like you said, the first Bush, you know, because of the CIA background, you know, had the information. He briefed Reagan, that's what it said, and maybe that's why Reagan talked about it five different times, and you would think he briefed his son. But the interesting thing, and I don't think it was a Republican-Democrat thing, he didn't brief Clinton, like you said, and he also didn't brief Carter. And Carter had seen the UFO, and he still wouldn't brief him because he didn't think he'd keep it quiet. He felt Carter would actually come out and tell everybody.
Well, I wish it were true that presidents were capable and trustworthy. But we know, those of us who have been around long enough to have seen a number of presidents, that's not always the case. They're not always competent. And they're not always trustworthy. I've seen one or two that I thought were highly, highly competent and highly untrustworthy. I've also seen some that were just totally trustworthy, but very incompetent. And it's rare when we get the two together. But,
you know, going back to the last caller, you know, I think the people, and he mentioned Jackie Gleason, why would his wife say that? The people that come forward on this, to me, are the people with the highest degree and level of integrity. Because you really have nothing to gain.
That is true, and we have to step away for a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is John Ventry. He is the state director for MUFON in the state of Pennsylvania. Now, John, when we went away for break, you were making the comment that some of these people that come out and make statements about UFOs are highly credible, and they have everything to lose and nothing to gain. Then we had to go to break, so the mic is yours.
Yeah, I was saying, like, with the situation with Jackie Gleason, you really don't make that up. And, you know, even just going back to this fire officer's guide that, you know, we're talking about, it goes into talking about Barry Goldwater and Gerald Ford. And, you know, it goes into how Barry Goldwater was a retired Air Force Reserve Brigadier General and pilot. And it quotes him in many instances saying that he believes that aliens are real, that they may not have best interests at stake, and that he believes that the Air Force investigates these cases. And there was one general, I don't recall his name, that Goldwater had called and asked about, I know you're keeping this stuff at Wright-Patterson, I want to get in there to see it. And the general told Barry Goldwater, said, don't ever ask me that again. You know, and then this guy, like we were talking about, goes into Gerald Ford, and it says, you know, a few decades ago, when the government was treating UFOs they treated it as no laughing matter, which is what we had said earlier in the 1940s and 50s, and it talks about 1966 Representative Gerald Ford responded to a rash of sightings in Michigan. And he got a House hearing on UFOs. And that's why I believe a lot of the stuff that happened in the 40s, 50s, 60s, those were the truth with it. And now it's all, you know, cover-ups.
I think, you know, the cover-up does continue. But, you know, the old famous line from the Western movies, where the Indian would say, white man speak with forked tongue. Well, you know, the cover-up continues, but they speak with a forked tongue because on the one hand, they will say, well, we don't know. We didn't have any planes in the area, so we don't know anything about it. We didn't see anything on the radar. Go away. That's one approach. The other approach is at the same time, they're putting documents out, like what you're reading from, where it does not deny the fact, and in fact says that there is a real threat possible from UFOs. Let's go to the telephone and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
How are we doing tonight?
Good.
Yeah, when I called back last night, I had a question pertaining to I know your guest, it kind of pertains to him, but with Dr. Horn, and you had the night before, you had a thing about UFOs on, you know, and supposedly, you know, approaching and what they are, you know, and I was going to ask you if you think that that has anything to do with, like, what Dr. Horn was talking about last night.
Are you talking about the objects that have been photographed around the sun?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I don't know what those are. Now, some folks sort of misunderstood, although I said it many, 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 many times during the show. I'm not saying that those are planet-sized motherships. What I said was if those objects are as close to the sun as they appear to be in the pictures, then they are planet-sized. But we don't know. We can't tell from the pictures how close they are, and we can't tell how close the camera is to those objects. So we don't know what those are.
Yeah. The Solos spacecraft that are watching the sun, you know, they picked them up. You know, and I've even picked up stuff, I don't know how true it is or not, on the internet, but it appears that they may be even coming in and out of the sun, and they are huge, and they are, some of them appear to even be actually battling one another, you know, so I just kind of wonder if you thought that, you know, might tie into, Mr. Horn's thinking.
Yeah, well, I don't know. We would have to ask him. Yeah. But we can ask John Ventry, what about these objects that have been photographed around the sun? Are you familiar with those, John?
Yeah, I've seen a few articles on it, and I got two thoughts on it. One, that our law of physics is not universal, and we don't know it all, because obviously something that close to the sun should get sucked in from the gravity. I don't know how it could be even that close between the heat and the gravity. And the other thought, too, and I had heard this years ago, was that these objects fly in direct line of the sun only because we can't see it. Obviously, you know, with the human eye, nobody looks up and stares at the sun. So the way to approach the planet would be in direct sunlight because you're not going to see it. You only pick it up with these satellites and equipment that could actually look that direction. We certainly can't look that direction.
Yeah. Good point.
Does he know anything about those large UFOs that's in the ring of Saturn? And I'll take the rest out there. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you know, when we eventually, probably on your next show, Kevin, talk about the Air Force Cadet Manual, which I really want to talk about because that has some real good stuff in there, it talks about that they could be living in the asteroid belt. They could be based in the asteroid belt is one of the theories in the Air Force document, which we'll eventually get to. So, you know, could they be in the rings of Saturn? Certainly. It's, you know, that's half the distance to Earth from the satellite belt, so they could be. It's a way station.
So the Air Force Manual, the Air Force, you're talking about the course that was taught at the Air Force Academy, right?
Yeah.
And it actually says that they may be living in the rings of Saturn or in the asteroid belt?
Yeah, it's one of the theories of where they could be coming from.
Wow.
Yeah. But, you know, we'll get to that one on the next show. I want to try to just finish up the FEMA book here on the disaster control.
Yeah, go ahead.
Since we only got about 20 minutes left.
Yeah. It's all right. Go ahead.
You know, it's okay. So here we are. You know, we go back to our original talk that we're talking about a FEMA-approved fire officer's guide to disaster control. And after all what we just talked about, the presidents and everything else, now it starts to get into adverse potential of UFOs. And these are the titles I'm reading out of the book. You know, UFO hazards, powerful electrical fields, psychological effects, force field impact, communication disruptions, regional power blackouts. It talks about panic that can result, and referring back to what happened with Orson Welles' panic broadcast. And I'm just reading the titles off of this. Physiological and psychological problems of coming into contact with UFOs. It says here, while pursuing UFOs, military aircraft have disappeared in midair, exploded, and suffered harassment. Persons on the ground have sustained serious burns, paralysis, and blows from force fields, emissions or rays and beams that have been described like that of a stun gun. And this is in the fire officer's guide. It says here, UFOs may not only have the power to control some of our military and industrial establishment highly technical scientific hardware, they may also possess the ability to impose pain and control over the people who attempt to attack them, even to the extent of liquidating them. And then the conclusion here in this section, it talks about emergency action, you know, obviously having to put a plan together. It quotes Frank Edwards' book, The Warning. It says, near approaches of UFOs can be harmful to human beings. Do not stand under a UFO that is hovering at low altitude. Do not touch or attempt to touch a UFO that has landed. In either case, the safe thing to do is get away from there very quickly and let the military take over. There is a possibility of radiation danger, and there are known cases where persons have been burned by rays emanating from UFOs. Don't take chances with UFOs. Isn't that an interesting quote?
It is indeed. And again, that's in the firefighter's manual. That manual is in every firehouse in America, and it's approved by FEMA. And I think that's pretty astounding verbiage to be in a manual like that, if in fact there's no such thing as UFOs.
Yeah, and you know, he ends up with a quote saying, truth is the best cure for the unknown, and then a list of some of the available books on unidentified flying objects is found in Appendix H. So you can just continue your research by looking in Appendix H and getting more material on ufology. But you know, that's just one document that we talked about tonight that's approved by the government. I mean, you have to have some protocol on this phenomenon. You can't just be surprised like we were, you know, with Katrina. I mean, here you go. We have better material on what to do about a UFO encounter than FEMA had on what to do about a hurricane or flooding.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
You make a point in your presentation, and you alluded to that tonight. There haven't been any congressional investigations or hearings on Bigfoot, or no congressional hearings on elves, no congressional investigations or hearings on the fairy folk, but there have been hearings, congressional hearings, about UFOs. And I think that, you know, that by itself is a huge, huge highlight. And by highlight, I mean it's just like taking a yellow highlighter pen and highlighting the subject of UFOs so that everybody will look at it and say, yeah, it's real. The hearings, I think everyone wants to get to a point where we can say, okay, UFOs. Here's where they come from. And the camera pans over to the right, and there's a extraterrestrial there, and someone says, and here's who drives it. And now we're going to put a mic under this guy's mouth, and he's going to tell us all about where he comes from. We would all like something like that. But that's never going to happen. Nevertheless, the amount of information, the amount of evidence for the existence of UFOs, if stacked up, would make several Mount Everests. The quality of that evidence, in many cases, in fact, I would say in most cases, the quality of the evidence is superb. Now, I used to be a cop. And I can tell you, you could take the amount and quality of evidence that there is for UFOs, you could take that and divide it by 1,000 and take that amount and that quality into court and get a conviction every time. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. It's the Kevin Smith Show, and with me this evening is John Ventry. He is the state director for MUFON, Pennsylvania. And when we went to break, I had just made the statement that you could take all the evidence, the mountains of evidence for UFOs, and the quality of that evidence, divide it by 1,000, take the remainder, take what you get, it's actually your quotient, take it into court and present it as a case in court and win your case every time. It's that strong. Now, there are people that would disagree with that, but folks, I was a career cop, and I made hundreds of arrests over the course of the years I was a cop, and I have yet to lose a case in court. I think I know what I'm talking about. John, would you agree or disagree?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. No, but I don't know that we would win this in court, because that's the predicament we're in. And I use that same analogy that, you know, you could go to a courtroom right now, and, you know, you have the jury, you've got your witness, and they all convict this person of stealing a purse, even though you didn't even recover that purse, you know. Now, they all walk outside, the jury, the judge, everybody, it's over with, they look up and see a UFO. Nobody's going to believe them. Now, why? Why is it something like that nobody believes, but it could be the same credible people who just convicted someone on circumstantial evidence? So I think the evidence is there. I think there's plenty of it. I think it should convict somebody or be proven, but it's held to some different standard because we're worried about other things like panic and the institutions and what will happen if the truth is told.
And yet, and I want to make a point of this because we've talked about all of this here tonight. Here's what we've got. If you are listening to the show or you're watching the show on our TV channel, if you are still sort of in your mind undecided, here's the evidence that you need to think about. Number one, astronauts, and you heard one tonight. You didn't hear about it. You heard it. I played it for you. Astronauts talking about we have the alien spacecraft under observance. You have NASA saying UFOs are not abnormal in the space environment. You have Project Blue Book, which was an official government investigation of UFOs, that came away saying there are some of these that are unidentified flying objects. you have a FEMA-approved firefighter's manual that talks about the threat of UFO attack as being a real fact, and that firefighters need certain information in case they get called out as a result of something like that. And then you've got the Air Force that was teaching a course in the academy on the reality of extraterrestrial, or I'm sorry, on the reality of UFOs, and suggesting they may be of extraterrestrial origin. You have the U.S. Air Force that has deployed in space the space-based space surveillance system, and its purpose is to watch deep space in order to identify and track deep space forces for both offensive and defensive purposes. Those optical satellites are not pointed at Earth. They're not. It has nothing to do with aiding the war fighter on the ground. It has to do with deep space. So pile all that together. Open, blatant statements by the people who wrote these documents, approved by the federal government, that UFOs are indeed real and can pose threats, and it's documented. You know, the report even has footnotes so that you can trace it down to its source. Add all that up and then ask yourself, is it credible to continue to keep your head in the sand or some other place less glorious and continue to say, I just don't know about this. I got to think about it. I don't think that's too smart. I think that is what, that fits the definition of what I'm talking about when I call people mushrooms. John, what do you find as the director of MUFON? What do you find to be the sort of trend, the sort of mood among people now? Are more people becoming aware and accepting of the facts? Or do you find that people are becoming more shielded by their own choice, shielded from the facts? I mean, where is this headed?
Well, I think definitely, and all of the polls show this, that the public is more accepting of UFOs. The more we're exposed to, every time they do a ROPA poll, an AOL poll, etc., the numbers go up that they believe that there's life in outer space. They believe the planet has been visited. They believe the government isn't telling the truth. But the thing I find interesting is when you look at ghost hunting compared to ufology, you know, UFO Hunters is off the air. We put together that pilot show between MUFON and the Discovery Channel, UFOs Over Earth, which was three great shows we put together. The ratings weren't that good. Everybody's watching this ghost stuff, which, you know, I like it. It's enjoyable. I've had some paranormal experiences. But the interest in ufology is minimal compared to, say, the interest in ghost hunting. You know, I put on these conferences here in Pennsylvania, great conferences. I've had Stanton Friedman, Richard Dolan. You know, I get maximum, I had one conference got 600, but that was unusual. But usually the conferences, I barely get 100 people, 140 max. I go to the Bigfoot conference, there's 400 people there. I went to the gun show last Saturday. There had to be 1,000 people there. You know, and every channel has a ghost hunting show on there. So, you know, I wish there was more interest in ufology. It's a bigger, more important question. But truthfully, I don't think there's a lot of interest out there in the public for UFOs.
I think that is as a result of having been exposed to sort of overkill in sci-fi TV. And I'm not referring to Sci-Fi Channel. They're included, but every channel that shows like Stargate SG-1, Stargate Atlantis, Star Trek, Star Wars, Alien versus Predator, and Mission to Mars, and we could go on and on and on and on and on. There's just been overkill in the entertainment business, so that it's old hat to people now. It's like, oh yeah, okay, all right. And then, you know, it just doesn't get them excited. But if you ask how many of the people think that UFOs are real, it's, you know, how many think they're real in the 80 percentile area. If you ask, okay, well, do you think they're extraterrestrial? It's something like 62%. Do you think that the government is telling us everything they know about UFOs? About 92% say no. Now, those change from time to time. But, I mean, but as far as getting excited about it and thrilled about it, and, you know, let's get this done and get it investigated, I agree with you. I think the interest level has dropped. But I think it's because of familiarity. All right. We have to call this one a wrap. That's it for tonight. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.